I'm Jamal, and you're listening to Gas in the Mecha, your weekly anime and manga analysis podcast. From inspiring arcs to game-changing cinematography, I'm on a journey to try and make sense of it all, episode by episode. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to Gas in the Mecha, and in today's episode, we are back and talking about Heike Monogatari. I don't think there's too much to say for this introduction. We're going to be talking about why this is a good anime from the perspective of direction, basically, and what we can learn from it, kind of like what we do most of the time when we talk about direction. Of course, there will be minor spoilers for Heike Monogatari or the Heike story, and I'm going to be focusing on episodes 1 to 4. Episode 5 is a bit of a weird one for reasons I'm not going to talk about in this episode. But I'm going to focus on episodes 1 to 4 and the team which work on it. And yeah, let's get into the episode for this week. That is episode 105, A Guest in the Mecha. A look into this exciting approach that Heike Monogatari has in store. I know I said we're hopping right into this, however, where does one even begin with Heike Monogatari? I think it took so many people by surprise since there were so many things to unpack from the announcement, and the fact that it was coming out in 2 weeks as well from when the announcement actually came out. But firstly, Naoki Yamada leaving Kyoto Animation is a big thing for starters, and something I didn't really expect to happen for a very long time, if not at all. Mainly because you kind of built her entire image and aesthetic there in that studio, that it felt a bit weird, her being divorced from it. However, here we are. And also we have the fact that she's doing it at Science Saru of all places, which is two places, well, Kyoto Animation, Science Saru in my head from the like aesthetic point of view and based on the artist there. I feel like Science Saru leans more towards experimental anime and that sort of experimental style versus Kyoto Animation, which is much more about perhaps polish and cleanness. I didn't really know how to explain that very well, but they're doing that at these studio that was founded by Masaki Yuasa and Eunyoung Choi. And again, the 2 weeks as well, so there was almost no time to prepare for this, and so we were kind of just forced to dive right into it, and that's exactly what I've done. However, that being said, it's still been an incredible journey so far, and I didn't expect any less from Yamada and this team. But funny enough, we didn't really know who this team was or who was going to be, and it's still unraveling itself. And hence, in this episode, I want to talk, of course, about Yamada's style and aesthetic and approach to this anime from what I've picked up on, as well as the approach of these other creatives as well, since this is a completely like new team, and we're seeing creatives that I didn't think would ever see work together. I don't say in my lifetime, but I just never thought that these sorts of creatives would ever come together, and here we are. So this is a really important anime, and I want to try and get to the core of what makes it so beautiful. I think this anime is really an opportunity for director Naoki Yamada to unleash her full creative potential, and I have a bit of a, not really theory, but a feeling that Kyoto Animation, as great as it is, perhaps held her back and what she wanted to create, and I think Heike Monogatari is potentially the start of her being able to unleash what that vision truly is that lives within her. And we need all these varying creatives with different skill sets versus the ones which she's worked with for so long in order to really bring that out. And hence why we're going to look at this team, this directorial team, this episode. Let's first start off with the two ex-Kyoto Animation staff who are on the directorial team, who are, of course, Ayu Kimura and Naoki Yamada. Of course, remember that I am talking about episodes 1 to 4 as this show has not finished yet. And there may be more ex-Kyoani stuff coming in later that I'm not aware of, but that's simply because I'm not in the time frame to know that. And these two episodes in particular, I'd say, really sync up well with the narrative elements of the show, notably the very interesting dynamic between the eyes of our main character Biwa and some of the other characters like Shigemori, but also the dynamic between the Heike and everybody else, or just the very binary political conflicts which seem to be taking place. Like we have the Heike and the monks, we have the Heike and of course the rest of society, you could argue to be like the peasantry of some sorts. And also on a perhaps smaller scale, Biwa and those within the Heike as well, they just come from very different walks of life and so on. And the visual elements as well really cater around these ideas. When it comes to Naoki Yamada's first episode, which she storyboards and directs, you really have to pay attention, at least to me. I think you really have to pay attention to the framing in this episode. The way she uses, of course, the far left and far right of the screen to introduce these ideas of opposition, which we kind of discussed, and they are already introduced in the avant of the episode. Right from the get-go, she's already introducing what this narrative is about. It's about these personal conflicts as well as these political conflicts as well. And why not have the camera display that right from the beginning? She kind of doubles down on that idea of opposition by using this shallow depth of field and bokeh, which kind of she incorporates into the imaginary lens of the imaginary camera in which we have an animation. In our lenses episode, we spoke quite a lot about the sort of interplay between layers and how, just for anyone that didn't listen to it, and how that kind of represents this like, it's really good at representing absence and presence and these other ideas. And this does exactly that. So when we have someone like Kiyomori at the beginning saying that the Heike are, well, I don't know if it was him exactly, but it's saying, suggesting that the Heike are the only sort of real people since they have political rights and so on versus everyone else that isn't really a person. I think the bokeh and of course the shallow depth of field really brings in that message. The same would go for a film like A Silent Voice as well, which uses this to show the sort of, it's a visual way of representing silence in how everybody else is kind of in the background and shallow, whereas we have the main character Shoya in the front and in focus. And it's really the same with Heike Monogatari, but she really manages to make it applicable to this show in particular. I would say this is so important for the first episode as it's a way of telling the viewer right away what this story is going to be about. It's about, as much as it is about the people and the time period, it's about the separation between them and how different certain people were and how separate people's lives were. And we get to find that out literally from the first few frames of this show. And throughout the first episode, and Yamada just really wants us to know that message, I think. When it comes to Yamada as a director, I think what she's really great at is just having her style intersect with the narrative at hand and fine-tuning it to ensure that it's purposeful for the story in which she's trying to tell. This is also something we spoke about with A Silent Voice as well, and how a lot of the imagery is built around water and that drowning feeling of silence, you could argue. I know that sounds a bit contradictory, but I think you get what I mean. And these visual means of conveying silence, water is one way of doing that. And hence a lot of the distortion from the lens and the colors of some of the frames and so on, it kind of all incorporates into this larger idea and story she's trying to tell about what it's like with the social pressures of school and so on, as not believing you're able to do anything, the pain of living. We can go on for a long time. And Heike Monogatari has a very similar idea, or at least it's constructed and layered in a very similar way. We have, of course, the dynamic between people and society, the dynamic between these two eyes in which Biwa has, and so on, and hence that influences left and right, the focus and so on. So nothing or none of the techniques, I would say, feel like they are purely aesthetic and they're simply to be there. They're reasoned and justified with the story at hand. And that's what I always find very masterful about Naoki Yamada's work. This moves us very nicely to the work of Ayuki Mura, who takes a bit of a different style to Yamada, and it's noticeable, but it's one that works really well nonetheless. The magic of episode 2, which is storyboarded and directed by Ayuki Mura, is really in the framing, in how she uses both the top and the bottom of the frame as much as possible to try and obscure parts of the face, or really just give a lot of space to the world around them as well, and kind of show their insignificance within it. It's really cool, honestly. I think the environment is still a really important part that shouldn't be forgotten when analysing this anime, since the setting still gives us a really great insight into the characters at play, and also it helps us really understand, it helps set a tone for what's about to take place and kind of even subverts the tone as well. With all the tension in the court, it's quite ironic how we're surrounded with these beautiful seasonal flowers and vibrant colours they provide, all these lovely light blues and pinks and whites and greens, when in reality the political situation is much darker and bleaker and murkier for the Heike than it looks on the outside. There's been a lot of irresponsibility amongst those leading certain areas of jurisdiction. There's tension within the Heike in itself. The people who are living in these areas of jurisdiction, which are run by the Heike, aren't exactly happy either, and somewhat oppressed, you could argue. And so Yukimura kind of points out an interesting sort of sense of hypocrisy which exists in this anime. However, if we go back to the idea of personal relationships and what this anime is said to be about, the symmetrical compositions from Yukimura do a really great job of doing that. It's kind of a litmus test, I would say, for getting to know the feelings and moods of the characters when they're sitting together and there's so much space around them. You can tell that there's really some sort of bond and connection there. Versus when they're kind of sitting alone in the middle as well, that also paints a really... even though the shots are kind of similar, they tell a very different story. When someone is sitting alone and there's so much space on the outside of the frame, that sense of loneliness is definitely enhanced, versus when there are two people together, it feels much more intimate and they're the only two who have each other and they're together. So I would say Yukimura is a very essential part of conveying some of these messages of personal relationships, but also really helps for the political aspect of this anime too. Let's move on to episodes 3 and 4. Episode 3 is storyboarded and directed by a person known as China, and then we have episode 4, which is storyboarded by Ayu Kimura and Noko Yamada. They kind of co-board it, I suppose. And then we have episode director Shuntaro Tozawa, who's going to be the main focus of this part. So Tozawa's episode, so we're talking about episode 4 now. Tozawa, as an episode director, is one of my favorites right now, and they are really pushing things to their limit. And you would really get to know this if you were keeping up with Fire Force Season 2, as they directed, they directed some storyboards for what I would say are some of the best episodes of the show so far, being Season 2 Episode 2 and Season 2 Episode 12. Definitely check those out, because they are... again, they are full of potential and they are changing the game, I would even argue, at least. They're pushing the game further. When it comes to Tozawa's influence on these episodes, what I'm mainly drawn to is their color palette and the colors in which they use. Kind of like Yukimura, I find it cool how color works as a means of portraying a message, and it goes beyond just aestheticism and looking nice. But what's also very similar to Yukimura is how these very bright colors don't really have messages of positivity. And you would again get to know this if you watch Fire Force Season 2, as the second episode of Fire Force Season 2 has these amazing compositions and moments where we have these really bright colors, like almost neon colors. And this also goes to the other Fire Force episode as well, almost rainbows at times. But they go beyond their literal meaning. They have much darker connotations, and they're kind of made to make it look more polite than it actually is when it's a really dark thing. And Tozawa does kind of exactly that in the fourth episode of Heike Monogatari. The shrine vision scene is maybe one of the best scenes in the show so far. There are quite a lot of best scenes in the show, but one of them has to be the shrine scene at the end of episode 4. And it's really funny how they are talking talking about, of course, the death and the fall of the Heike and how everything is coming apart when it's filled with flowers and plants and greenery, which we often associate with new life and prosperity and growth. But this isn't a time of growth. This is the exact opposite. And so it's really powerful how this sort of imagery can be used in reverse. And I think this anime is moving to the point to which we kind of become very uncomfortable, because as we know, the imagery of flowers and plants and so on is, I'm not a flower language expert, by the way, just saying, I don't even have a garden, so I know very little about flowers. However, I think because it's such a prominent part of this show, the natural world that is around the Heike and just the areas in which they're in, I think it's going to be hard to be able to tell the difference between when this is being used for negative purposes and positive purposes. We're kind of always surrounded by these negative ideas of death and the fall of the Heike and so on. In short, I would say that the power of Tozawa is to make us feel uncomfortable and question what we already often feel comfortable with. The plant imagery is now being twisted and subverted by this director, and moving forward, I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of this, even if it isn't from Tozawa's episodes. And then the final staff member that I want to cover this episode is China, who worked on episode 3. And I'm going to be honest, I did not see them working on this show at all. It was a very welcome surprise because I really love their work. But I was very surprised when I looked at the credits that day and I saw them right there. I was like, wait, this can't be real. But it was. And so China's work on this episode really revolves around space and distance. However, one shouldn't confuse that with being not emotional and personal, as it really is. It's more so the space that is doing the talking. I would refer you back to Just Call It Love, a amazing music video from China directed by them. And the space is what does most of the storytelling, even though it is a very personal anime music video about how two girls kind of find love with each other. However, it's interesting how it is them doing the storytelling, don't get me wrong, like characters are integral to narrative, of course, but it's more so that when we get further into the music video, we have these compositions where some of the characters are very far off into the corner or into the distance of the camera, or most of the shot isn't them, it's everything around them. But that is what tells us about what is in their hearts and what they're feeling. These massive wide shots tell us everything we need to know about the situation with the Heike and just what is going on, without having, you know, characters right in the fore. It's the world around them that says everything we need to know. I also think what makes China a really great director for this project especially is the fact that they're able to tell stories very quickly and again give us information and what we need to know in very short spaces of time, and it's very effective. I of course refer you back to the Just Call It Love music video, and I'm not surprised that when you have a director that has experience in music videos, I feel like that would be very applicable to anime as well. But obviously you have a longer story to tell in the space of about 20 minutes or so. But when you have an anime like this, in which I would say it's paced relatively fast and events take place pretty quickly, you have to really get the message across quickly as well. And I also refer back to the running scene in episode 3, in which Biwa is running to catch up with Shigemori. And at the same time, we have this execution which is about to take place. And the way they're able to cross-cut between the execution and Biwa running is just masterful as well. It's only about 3 shots, but we're able to see the person's neck, we're able to see the sword coming down and everything, and we keep cross-cutting between them, and they have just really mastered cutting, and you'll see that in their other work too. They know when to cut and what cuts are most effective. In my view, when it comes to delivering information, it doesn't just come down to how quickly you tell the information and just words, but it's what you show. And each shot feels so purposeful in China's episode. Each one feels like it feels almost very, I would say economical, but I mean that in a very good way, as in it says just the right amount that's just about enough to obviously keep you interested in the episode. It doesn't just give everything away, but at the same time, it gives us the right amount of information to keep us sort of in the know at the same time. So let's get some takeaways and draw out some conclusions for what we can really learn from the directors of Heike Monogatari. And what this show really teaches me is that there's so much blooming talent and upcoming talent in the anime industry right now. And Heike Monogatari seems to kind of be the tip of the iceberg as to not just what these creatives can do, but the amount of talent that is there and so many creatives that simply just need to be given the opportunity to work on these really interesting projects, and they can really show off what they can do. There is so much to unpack from this anime, and if we were to talk about the political themes in these 5 or 4 episodes so far, we would be here for a really long time. However, I think these directors do a really great job of unpacking that in a way in which feels much more approachable and digestible, still keeping that, I would say, complexity when we look at, of course, Tozawa and Yukimura, and when we're talking about color and so on. I would say there's definitely still that complexity in there, and the layers is still in there, but it's not to the extent to which this anime could be really alienating, and I'm sure to some it probably already is, but it keeps us close, and it's a very personal one that I think can still be related to. I think it takes a really good director to do that, and Yamada and her team have done a really excellent job of doing so. I say this a bit too often, but I think it's really applicable to Heike Monogatari, and the idea that no anime is worked on alone. This anime is much more than Naoki Yamada's post-Kyoto animation venture, but it's the emergence of a new team of talented individuals that deserve just as much credit. I don't want to speak too soon, but I feel like this is going to be a really important anime for both, like, Naoki Yamada moving forward and these other creatives as well. Since, again, when we're seeing creatives that we never, maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, but I never imagined would come together and would ever collaborate at all. Like, Takashi Kojima and Naoki Yamada, I thought were like two opposite sides of the industry, and now they're making an anime together, basically. And that just feels really surreal. And I think that will probably lead to some much more interesting projects moving forward. And hence, it's really important to pay attention to Heike Monogatari, basically. What is so exciting about this anime is, one, it's just seeing this team unravel week by week as we check the credits and we see a completely new person working on the show. And it feels really awesome and really inspiring, actually. And just seeing newer creatives do their best and deliver their spin to this anime, I think is really important. I think if we go back to this anime being about these very personal relationships, it's really important that we have these different perspectives, as this anime is very much about the very different approaches people have to the world and the society in which they're in. And these individual perspectives and the lived experiences, I think you can only truly replicate that, or at least as best as possible in direction, by having these newer voices and these voices that, again, we would never really see coming together. And that's why I really love this anime, because it's from not just the anime and narrative itself, but from the perspective of direction and all the production stuff, it feels like it's doing a great job of replicating what the anime's all about to begin with. Kind of like we said on the animation direction episode, each creative brings their own life experiences and experiences on other anime and creative outlook and approach to animation to each episode. And we're seeing that right here in Heikimonogatari. This is a live example. And that lived experience of these creatives and experience in the industry is coming together nicely and intersecting nicely with the various lived experiences of the people in this anime. And hence, I think we're in for a really great treat going forward if it continues like this. And with that being said, that is the episode for this week. I hope you did enjoy this one, and I hope you're enjoying Heikimonogatari too. In the comments, tell me what is your favorite part of Heikimonogatari? I would love to know. I have quite a few favorite moments, so I might just like list them all to you in the comments. And yeah, thank you for listening so much to this episode. Again, it's late. I say this every week. I don't want to keep making excuses, but yeah, I just wanted to get this one out in good shape so it actually works okay rather than having it rushed. But that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and I will see you next week. The music in this production goes as follows. Mandatory Overtime by Joth. And Synthwave by Alex McCulloch.